I couldn't tell you. Even with the stats that you had and the background that you brought, if you were to apply this year, I couldn't tell you with any certainty whether you'd get in this year's class.
Oh man, classes are getting better. Hello and welcome to Business Beyond Usual. My name is Ramu and I'm very excited for today's episode. Today I'm joined by Sujin Kwan, Managing Director of Full-Time MBA Admissions and Program at Michigan Ross. Sujin, thanks for coming into our little makeshift studio here.
I'm happy to be here, Ramu.
Did I see that you and the team just released interview invitations?
We sure did. We just did that yesterday. We're pretty excited.
Ah, gotcha. You probably can't tell me how those applications are looking, can you?
I can tell you a little bit. They're looking really good. We're going to
Okay.
have a hard time making decisions this year because they keep getting better and better.
Always, always. That's good. Always going up. Well, it sounds like an exciting and busy time for you guys, so thanks again for joining me today. We had quite a bit of interest from our listeners eager to get the chance to ask you some questions, and we're going to get to those. But first, I have my own question. So something I've been curious about, back in July, Dean DeRue announced some strategic changes to our academic and career development leadership that, in his words, are designed to better serve your needs and enhance your experience at Michigan Ross. I'm curious if you could expand on some of those changes and what they mean for myself as a current student and future students.
Sure. So the main changes impacting MBAs is that, one, they have an associate dean who's fully dedicated to them, no longer an associate dean who oversees a whole portfolio of degree programs. Two, they now have an admissions director who also oversees the program, which means from beginning to end, I get to see what the student experience is like as a prospective student through graduation. So I'm trying to make it as great and consistent throughout the entire life cycle. And then three, they have a managing director of career development who used to be the managing director for the full-time MBA program. So she brings a wealth of knowledge and experience knowing what full-time MBAs care about. And so she's going to bring that into the career development space.
Well, that sounds great. So what does that mean tangibly? What can we kind of see?
So the ultimate goal is to continuously improve the student experience. I meet regularly with the student council and section presidents. We hold focus groups and town halls with the dean and with myself and with the managing director of career development. And we're surveying students too to keep a pulse on what's important and what we should know to make it better.
Well, it's interesting to hear how things are changing from the student experience angle. Have you seen any changes in the MBA marketplace, so to speak? How have admissions changed in the last few years, both in terms of criteria and evaluation, or in terms of trends of the applicant demographics? I'm interested to hear kind of from your side, from the admissions perspective.
So it's slowly been shifting on the marketplace side. We're seeing more students who are interested in tech, for example, and social impact as career goals. We're seeing shifts in backgrounds too. You used to see standard business backgrounds being the typical feeder into business schools, and that's not the case anymore. We've got students coming from nonprofit and the government and from sports and every industry you can name. We've got students in the class. And then we're also seeing more women becoming interested in the program or in MBAs in general, which is great for us. In terms of admissions criteria, we have shifted our focus a little bit more towards the in-person traits that we can observe, not what we see on a screen in your application. What I mean by that is we're really looking at your teamwork and your communication and interpersonal skills, which recruiters care about. And so we care about it too. More of the weight is on the live or the authentic pieces of the admissions process for us than it used to be, and I think for us more than for other schools as well.
I'm interested in the first point in terms of the marketplace and the shifts in the marketplace. How do we as a school take those incoming trends and translate that into courses, into new program offerings, into new clubs, activities, from the admission side all the way into the program side?
So on the admissions side, we love seeing the diversity of backgrounds and interests because it really adds to the robustness of the experience for students while they're here. On the program side, we've been working with students to meet student demand. We're introducing new classes where faculty work with students to come up with classes that they may be interested in. Fintech, other things will come up based on student interest and student initiative. And then the clubs, every year we see new clubs started based on what students are interested in. There are clubs that are in existence now that weren't in existence 5, 10 years ago. So we really are shifting what we offer and who we are based on where students and the market is going.
I'm excited you said fintech because that's the space I'm interested in the most. And it's interesting to see just recently a club kind of start up. And actually, the undergrads, have started the club, but it's open to everyone. And it's great because you want a breadth in terms of a small kind of community like that, like FinTech. But, you know, we're having a kind of an offering here with, you know, engagements with activists in the community, with companies. So we're already seeing kind of that manifest and go forward. So I was going to ask you about, like, you know, so we've seen changes in your actual admissions, the essays, and in terms of, you know, across different schools, we've seen people do kind of different things. I want to get your take on some of those more, it seems like more gimmicky type of essay questions, you know, whether it's a picture and give me your short answer.
We really want to get inside a student's head and how they think about things, what they think is important, what they want us to know. As you can see from our essay questions, they're not on the gimmicky side. We're really giving students choice about what they want to showcase about themselves. So what's new this year is we've got short answer questions. There are 9 questions. You pick 3 of them. And that gives students choice in terms of what they want to highlight about their personality, about their approach, how they think about challenging issues. And we make it only 100 words because we don't need a whole big essay for us to get inside your head and understand this is important, this is how I operate, these are my values.
Do you find that that is helping to align students with the school? So you've been doing this for so long and the process has changed so much. And because it's changed, have you seen a better alignment with individuals to the school?
I think so, and you can attest to that, that the students here really gel well together. One of the things that we are told constantly is our community is really what sets us apart. And a lot of that happens as we review applications and figure out what is the best fit. It's not just who's smart and who has great accomplishments, but also who will contribute here to the school and to the student experience.
Gotcha. I think that's a fun peek behind the curtain, so thanks for that. Well, Zuja, I'm always cognizant of the international student experience, so I'm interested to hear from you, what are some things that are going on to address some of the trends that are, you know, occurring right now in the domestically?
One of the things that we've loved seeing is how students help each other. And one thing that's popped up this year is called Culture Shock. It's student-initiated, helping each other figure out how to navigate life and recruiting in the U.S. So it's U.S. students meeting regularly with international students and basically being mentors, coaches, partners in their navigation of student life and recruiting. And given that we've got students from 45 countries, there's a lot of diversity, and meeting the needs of each student is best done individually. And I love that our students have stepped up to provide that kind of support on their own to their peers.
Yeah, that's really interesting because, I mean, even my past internship this summer, it was an international student lender. And we would talk about, you know, that first day on campus, whether it's an engineer, master's student, or an MBA, how different of a culture it can be here in the States and here in Michigan. I think there was a story of one person only went to Starbucks to go get lunch and dinner every day because she didn't know any better. She, you know, wasn't sure, you know, how to venture out, you know, what's the process to get an Uber, to go somewhere to a restaurant. It's just different, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So students helping students is something that we love to see. And that's the kind of community that we have. That's pretty representative.
So this question comes from one of our listeners, Tucker. And hey there, Tucker. Thanks for listening and thanks for the question. Tucker writes, this summer, Sujin shared how she would answer the short answer questions in the application. So I'm wondering how she would prepare for the interview or team exercise.
Let me start with the team exercise because that one's easy. You don't have to prepare. It's nothing that you need to prepare for. It's something that you're going to do on the spot with 4 or 5 other people, and it's designed not to have to prepare for, because it's one of those things where, similar to what you'll experience at Ross and in real life once you start working again, you're going to be thrown on a team and asked to work together to solve a problem. That's exactly what we're asking students to do here. For the one-on-one interview, my recommendation would be to be familiar with your story. Review your resume, know it inside and out, because you could be asked questions about any part of it. And then understand what you want to convey to your interviewer, who you are, and do it succinctly.
I think that's really spot on. So when I went through the interview process, I was really impressed at how casual it felt. It was just a conversation with another MBA too. And he made me really feel like very comfortable in that setting that can be very kind of stressful. But I think that's important is understanding who you are and what your story is, how you align with the school and the school aligns with you and what those values are. And then on the team side, I don't know, to be frank, I think there's an element of let's make sure this person isn't a jerk. know, isn't talking over everyone in a group dynamic, can work with others. And that's really important here and in a very collaborative group type of environment.
Absolutely.
Every class is very team-based.
Yep.
This question comes from Ankit on your most recent blog entry. Will I get a denial email from Ross if I'm not invited to interview in round one? So, Sujin, what does that process look like for applicants who may not have received an invitation?
So, if you didn't receive an invitation, it means one of two things. You'll either be waitlisted or you won't be admitted, and you won't find out until December 15th because it goes through more than one review. The interview invitations go out after one review. So, all applications will go through more than one review. The people who are invited to interview may or may not be admitted. The people who are not invited to interview may be waitlisted or denied, or in the subsequent round, they could be invited to interview too. So we don't release people early because we don't know yet for sure which stream they'll go down.
What does that waitlist timeline look like? Does that extend just for one round, or is that all the way through the summer?
It could be to the next round. It could be to the subsequent round. It could be during the summer. We do check in with people to see, are you still interested in staying on the waitlist? And then if you're not, then we'll take you off and maintain as small a waitlist as we can.
Okay, great. This person didn't leave a name in their question, so we'll just say it's from Anonymous. Anonymous writes, "Hi, Sujin. I just had a simple question for the interview with Ramu. How important are my stats? So I read your newest class has the highest average GMAT score ever, and that makes me a little nervous. Do I need to quit my day job just to study for the GMAT and get the highest score possible?"
I can't think of anything more miserable than quitting your job and studying for the GMAT all day. So no, don't do that. The GMAT is only one thing that we look at in a holistic process. We're looking at your essays and your resume and your rec letter, your transcript, your work history, your interview, your team exercise, all of those things. We ask for all those things because we care about each piece of that. There is not one single thing that can tank you in the admissions process. So yes, do the best that you can on the GMAT. Do look at what our range is so you know what the ballpark is for realistic. But if you've tried again and you just can't seem to move the needle, focus on the other parts and do the best you can on the other sections.
I think I know what you're going to say, but is it 700 plus or bust?
Oh, absolutely not. We have a wide range of scores among our students, and we find that it's not a score that determines the success of a student here at Ross. We're always looking very closely at each applicant beyond their test score or their GPA to see, is this a diamond in the rough? Is this someone who will contribute to our community in different ways that we might not see through just a score? We're not looking at each person as you're a score. We're looking at what is your potential to bring greatness to the school and contribute and learn. So it's definitely more than about a score.
I think that's really interesting, too. I felt that when I was going through the admissions process is the desire to get to know me as an individual and not just, you know, there's a piece of paper here saying who I am. But that's why we have the team exercise and that application process with the one-on-one interview with the MBA, too. Mm-hmm. There's a certain level of warmth that we want to get to a certain level of understanding. That I felt a lot. So I really appreciated that going through.
And I have to tell you behind the scenes how much the team really gets behind each applicant. They are reading the application from cover to cover and advocating for every applicant, regardless of score. And it's really pretty amazing to me how much our team gets to know each applicant and can spout off different things about each applicant as we're sitting around the table making final decisions.
I think that's why it's so important to understand who you, like we talk about the story and understanding who you are and where you're going. But I think I spent actually maybe more of my time, maybe equivalent to the time I spent on GMAT and studying. I spent 2-3 months on just my story. And what did I want to do? Like, why am I going to business school? Why am I going to this business school? What am I getting out of it?
Yeah. And by story, I hope you mean not just your essays, but thinking about how do I frame my own mind and how I talk about myself in the interview and how I position it to my recommender. It weaves itself throughout the whole application.
My career vision. Like, how do I see myself as a professional in the next 2 to 3 years, the next 5, 10, 20 years?
Yep. And it's a great exercise to go through because it's going to help you plan your career, not just before business school, but as you're going through it, it's going to help you filter through what are the experiences that I want to gain? What do I want to do after I graduate from here? It really sets you up to take that time to think about what do I want to do?
Perfect. Do you kind of bucket people in terms of like career switchers and career accelerators? And then are you looking for a type of narrative that they're able to bring out in their story?
No. As you may know, nearly 90% of our students are career changers. So the vast majority are coming to us most likely, as wanting to change a career. That doesn't change how we look at somebody. Although we are looking for people who can tell a good story about why they want to do something. And it could be a really wild switch, but we want to know that there's a good rationale for why they want to do something and they understand what it might take.
Gotcha. Well, here's another one, Sujin. So what most excites you at Ross this semester or year?
One of the exciting things that was just launched this semester is called the Living Business Leadership Experience. And this is kind of the fourth prong of our action-based learning umbrella, where students get to do something real. In this experience, what they're doing is they're going into an existing business and helping them launch a new business line. Let me give you an example. At Shinola, which has luxury goods, they make bikes and leather goods, they're getting into the audio business. So our team of students has been tasked with developing this business line around developing new speakers. So they're coming up with the organization, the marketing, the financing, the supply chain for all of that. And they're doing it with a real company under the guidance of alumni and faculty. And so they're getting hands-on experience running, leading, starting a business. So there are three of those experiences happening now. Shinola, I mentioned, the Ford Smart Mobility, and then an affordable housing group. And then in the next semester, we're going to have three more come online. And the idea is to continue to build on the portfolio of businesses that students are going to help start and run.
Yeah. And, you know, I know Matt Weiss that, you know, was on that MAP team, and then that project from Shinola has continued on to that LBLE. I think that's really amazing. And when you look at what schools are offering in the marketplace right now, and it's you know, you're going to get some similar courses in terms of finance, accounting, supply chain. So it's becoming kind of a commoditized product, right?
Yeah.
So
sure.
how do you train and develop and prepare future leaders to go into the marketplace? And I think this is a really great initiative.
You sound like our dean. That's exactly what he would say.
Yeah. And speaking about that MAP kind of translation, actually, I just read in Pose and Quants, they compared kind of the MAP experience in the LBLE and how many schools are having these types of action-based programs integrated into their curriculum. So I'm wondering from the Ross side, isn't that a worry that we are kind of becoming like everybody else, or everyone else is becoming like us?
It's the latter. Everyone is trying to be us, but nobody is us. Most schools are trying to do MAP, which is you go in and advise for an organization, you assess a situation, a challenge, and then give them recommendations. It's really a consulting project. What LBLE is students are actually going into an organization, starting up, running, developing an organization and a product or a service. And so they're actually doing real business as opposed to just advising.
Gotcha. Well, Sujin, you are on the road. You meet with a lot of students. You have a groundbreaking YouTube series that is fantastic. I know I watched it coming in. You have your blog post. So I'm wondering, what are some questions you hear most from prospective students?
Well, prospective students keep us on our toes because there's such a diverse range of interests. So we get questions from students about everything from entrepreneurship to real estate to healthcare to public service to social impact. And what's exciting is that we are a school that has programs and centers and institutes and different opportunities for students to really focus in those areas and not just do your typical finance, marketing, operations concentrations.
Are there any questions you get tired of hearing all the time?
I guess it would be, I'm non-traditional, but do you think I could still do well at business school? And the reality is, when I addressed the incoming students this year, I said, you know that more than 50% of you are non-traditional? I mean, you are the majority now. You are not the minority. And so anyone out there who feels like, well, I haven't worked in banking or marketing or consulting, will I be a fish out of water? That is absolutely not the case.
I think it was funny. Me and my buddy were preparing as we applied for business school, and he had prepared this really great model. And he actually assigned probabilities based on ranges and values and created this regression. And you know, he would ask admissions directors, like, what's the probability I can get in with this spec?
And 30%.
I'm sure, like, right? Like, how do you know some of these probabilities? It's
you
really
know,
tough deal.
I mean, someone can come up to me and tell me their stats and their background, and I can't tell you what their chances are. It's 50-50 like anybody else at face value, because right, it really depends on who else is in the pool and how big the pool is and what we're trying to shoot for in the class. So even being the head of admissions, I couldn't tell you, if you were to tell me who you are, Ramu, whether you'd get in today or not. Even with the stats that you had and the background that you brought, if you were to apply this year, I couldn't tell you with any certainty whether you'd get in this year's class.
Oh, man. Classes are getting better. Are there any misconceptions from prospective students on Michigan or Ross or the admissions process here?
I think one of the biggest misconceptions is around location, that if you come to school in the Midwest, that your life will be in the Midwest, your career will be in the Midwest. Let me debunk that myth. The majority of our students go to the East Coast, New York and Boston, and the West Coast. Actually, the West Coast is our biggest region. So Seattle, San Francisco, LA, that's our biggest region of the U.S. And then another almost 10% go outside of the U.S. Another 20% are in Chicago. So rosters go everywhere. So anyone who's afraid of location being a challenge, you can talk to any roster, you can talk to any grad. We've got alums everywhere, and our network is vast.
I think there's also some myths about, and that you can dispel, but what are the ideas in terms of like quotas of individual buckets of students in terms of demographics, in terms of geographies, in terms of backgrounds?
No quotas at all. We're okay. Really interested in weaving a very diverse fabric for our class.
Gotcha. I'm interested to hear from you, from your perspective in the shoes of an applicant.
Okay.
From your experience, how would you navigate the round one, round two, round three strategies nowadays?
You mean which round should somebody apply in?
Right, or? And what schools you put in those buckets. Like, how do you look at that, you know, from your perspective or your experience?
So which round would I apply in?
Earliest, right?
Earlier is definitely better. It's wide open, but there are not a certain number of slots that are reserved for a certain number of students. So that's not a concern. We always tell people apply in the round in which you think your application can be the best that it can possibly be. If that means you wait for the next round so you can get a better GMAT score or brush up your essays or get another project under your belt before you ask your recommender for a letter, then do that. That won't hurt you. The reality is the majority of applicants apply in round two, but one of the things that admissions officers have seen over the years is more and more applying in round one.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to turn it on you, Ramu. What do you think is the most exciting thing going on at Ross for you?
Oh, man. So I've been saying this a lot, but I'm in my second year now, and your first year is designed to be, you know, kind of vertical learning. You're learning in your accounting, your, you know, finance, your supply chain strategy. You're learning these vertical disciplines. Mm-hmm. But finally, after MAP, after a summer of internship, what's actually most exciting is the classes that come open to you in terms of electives. So I can't speak highly enough about turnaround management. It is by far one of the best classes I've taken here as well as in undergrad. It's taught by two professors that have a plethora of experience in the consulting world, helping turn around, you know, companies that are in distress and, you know, working to make them profitable. What are the levers that you pull to look at a company and help them to succeed? But that class is taking everything you learned in your core. And it's a cross-disciplinary class. So you're using everything you learn in your core. So rather than it's very vertical learning, now you're learning in a horizontal fashion. So you're, you know, applying everything that you've gotten. That's actually maybe the most surprising thing from this year is how much I've enjoyed my classes, how rigorous they've been, how challenging they are. I am working more now, I think, than I was in my first year. But it's a good type of work. I'm pushing myself to learn and dig deeper.
That's what we love to hear.
Yeah.
Good work, Ramu.
Hey, Sujin. Well, Sujin, that was awesome. Thank you so much for joining me.
So happy to be here. Thanks for asking.
I really enjoyed the discussion. I think it should be really helpful to some Ross hopefuls. We did get another letter from a listener with some tips for tweaking our outro, so I'm going to give that a try today. Thank you, Leslie, for the note. We're glad you like the show. And thanks to all our listeners for your questions and for tuning in. If you want to send us a note or have more questions for Sujin, reach out to us at bbupodcasts@umich.edu. That's bbupodcasts@umich.edu. And you can also subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher and leave us a review. It really helps other people find the show. Business Beyond Usual is brought to you by the University of Michigan's Ross School of Business. It is produced by me, Ramu Anomaly, and Christopher Ankeny. Jonah Brockman did our audio recording, mixing, and editing today. Thank you for listening, and we'll catch you next time on Business Beyond Usual.